Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Thank you. So Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 3, Rishabhdev's appearance, text number 18. And so on the paper I got, it said text number 14. So I prepared a really interesting class on text number 14, and it was really good. So now I haven't the slightest idea what I'm going to talk about. So this is Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Okay, Radharani Ki Jai. So I just chant this one time? Say it, okay. Tata Agni Driye Angsa Kalavatari Shami Atmatulya Anupalabdamanaha. Tata. Therefore, Agni Drije, in the wife of Nabi, the son of Agnidra, Anksa Kalaya, by an expansion of my personal form, Avatarishyami. I shall advent myself. Atmatulyam, my equal. Anupalab Amanaha, not finding. Tata Agni Drije Angsa Kalaya Avatarishyami Atmatulyam Anupalabdamana. Okay. Translation. Lord Vishnu, who's described as being very beautiful, says, since I cannot find anyone equal to me, I shall personally expand myself into a plenary portion and thus advent myself in the womb of Meru Devi, the wife of Nabi, the son of Agnidra. Please repeat. Since I cannot find anyone equal to me, I shall personally expand myself into a plenary portion and thus advent myself in the womb of Meru Devi, the wife of Maharaj Nabi, the son of Agnidra. Okay, so Prabhupada's purport. Hey, a little perspective. I am Hanumat Prashak Swami, and I was initiated in 1974, took sannyas in 84, started initiating other people in, was it 94? we started, it all happened the same day, you know. Started a non-profit educational corporation in 2004, and my astrologer says I'm going to die in 2024. So I got 10 years more, and I'm going to kind of finishing off things now, like that. Yeah, so on. Yeah. So anyway, my name means, everybody asks what the name means, Hanumat Prashak. We say Hanuman, Hanumat, Bhagavan, Bhagavat. Hanumat means of Hanuman, of Hanuman. Hana means Hanumanly, you know, quickly, you know, Hanumanly. And Prashak is somebody who sends a messenger. Like on the Indian letters, it'll say Prashak Kanam Hai, you know, name of sender, you know. So Hanumat Prashak is he who sent Hanuman with a message. Ramachandra Bhagavan Ki. Okay. Yeah. And so we are doing different programs. Actually, we're working with the Ministry of Education, with Sesha Das, and programs like that, and establishing Bhakti Bhai Baba centers. Prabhupada wanted a formal study. He wanted Bhakti Shastri. And then Bhakti Bhai Bhava is supposed to be the first six cantos. So we're developing these curriculum, the programs. And it's actually quite nice because most of the Puranas, I'll give you my standard Bhagavatam class then, most of the Puranas do not have commentaries, right? They start off talking about something and then they go to gym therapy and something else, you know, like that, you know? But Srimad Bhagavatam has a commentary by everybody because everybody wants to prove that Srimad Bhagavatam supports their philosophy because it's so great. So Shankaracharya never wrote a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada says because he didn't want to commit an offense directly to Krishna. And also because he knew it was impossible even for him to cover the Srimad Bhagavatam like that. But his less intelligent followers have commentaries. And they try to prove that Srimad Bhagavatam proves that we are all God. It's so, yeah. Akama, sarvakama va, moksha kama udarati, tivrena bhakti yogena, yajate purusham param. What does purusha mean? What does purush mean? If you go into a low class, if a rickshaw wala gets off his thing and goes into a low class restaurant, he goes to go to use the toilet, there are two doors, right? One says stri, and the other says, yeah, so even the rickshaw wala knows what purush means. So I wondered how the Mayavadis would translate this. I saw this in Mayavadi. How's this Mayavadi guy going to translate this, you know? And he said, whether you have all desires or you want to be free from all desires or you have whatever, you know, he says, in every case, you should worship with a great vow the supreme person. It was just no way around it. It's just Bhagavatam is so clear like that, you know? So there are commentaries by so many people on the Bhagavad Purana. Big scholars who know all the Vedas, everything else, big scholars, they say that the different Puranas are described like stars in the sky, you know, very beautiful, very wonderful, and very proud, you know, until the moon of Srimad Bhagavatam comes up, right? Oh, he's bigger than we are, like that. Yeah, and they say it's not an exaggeration. For the beauty of the poetry, for the depth of the philosophy, for the sophistication of the grammar, Srimad Bhagavatam is in the class by itself. I even saw one comment by an atheist. This guy was, you know, fully supporting Darwinian evolution, that atoms and molecules combine together, they produce, you know, single-celled animals, and by evolution they produce complicated things, they produce frogs become something else, and finally we get people organize civilization. There's competition amongst different societies, and the ones that survive, you know, they establish their culture. So his conclusion was that the greatest manifestation of the glories of evolution was Srimad Bhagavatam. He said, isn't evolution wonderful? It's produced the Bhagavad Puran. But this is people who know it, you know. But outside, even within India, people don't know the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada, you know, our parampara, this is the job, is just to let people see it. Just, once they begin to know it, they appreciate it. It's so wonderful. And there's different editions of different Puranas, some here, some there, different content. The Mahabharata we have is corrupted. There are things that have been added, things that have been taken out, things in the wrong place, like that. The Bhagavad Gita is standard, like that. Yeah. But the Bhagavatam, it appears constant. All the different editions of Bhagavatam in different places around the India, like that. There's very few deviations or variations like that. Yeah, yeah. Amala Purana. And it's again, it's very well organized. Other books will start with some topic, go to something else. You're not exactly sure what the Purana is really focusing on or talking about. But Srimad Bhagavatam is very clear. What is the Paribhasa Sutra of Srimad Bhagavatam? Ete chamsa. Yeah. Ete chamsa sakalpumsam Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. And that's the whole focus of Srimad Bhagavatam. We've already discussed Shiva, Devi, Durga, Mahavishnu, all these personalities, right? But Bhagavatam is trying to establish that all these incarnations, ete cha amsa sakalpum sam Krishnas tu Bhagavan Swayam. Yeah? That Krishna is the Swayam Bhagavan, right? Because so many personalities, India is the land of religion. Traditionally, in the Encyclopedia Britannica, the only country where it mentioned the philosophy of that country was India, not Germany, not China. Now they've added China and Arabia. But before, India was the only country where they talked about the philosophy of that country. So this is India's heritage, its wealth, you know, that, you know. And so out of all these things, so many discussions of God, theology, but Srimad Bhagavatam is focused on this point. It's going to establish Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. So it's a progressive study. The first two cantos are Krishna's lotus feet. 3 and 4 are his legs. 5 is his waist. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. The Rasa-lila chapters are his smile. 11, 12. And so gradually it's going through different incarnations, expansions, Shaktivesh avatars, so we can gradually appreciate Krishna in the 10th canto. You know, Rasaraj. Yeah, he can reciprocate all mellows. He has all qualities. So 5th canto is actually quite advanced. I'm amazed actually at that. Very advanced collection of scholars here. 2.2.12, Prabhupada says that one should not dare to recite beyond the first two cantos as long as one is still entangled in gross illicit sex. He uses the word sex desire 23 times in the purport. 23 times he says sex desire. She says, don't go beyond the first two cantos as long as you're, you know, not free from gross illicit sex. Many times you see Prabhupada was giving a public lecture on maybe a 5th canto, a verse like this or something. So he would talk a little bit about the verse, then he would go right into a Bhagavad Gita lecture. Paramatma, karma, 3 modes of nature. So publicly, he wouldn't go into these more advanced esoteric topics. You know? So our Bhakti Bhai Bhava program, we're going on through these progressively. We've gone through the first two cantos in 1 year. Third canto in 1 year. We're finishing the 4th canto this year. And next year we're going to do 5 and 6. And then we'll all be Bhakti Bhai Bhavas. It's a lot of work, you know, writing the curriculum. There's basically almost two major curricula available. The one from the Mayapur Institute and our curriculum. And other things are here and there. But it's a real job, you know, trying to write study guides and everything else for Prabhupada's books. It's very, very purifying, very nice. And you see, it's not just a matter of intellectual understanding. It's a matter of actual purification. The first two cantos, okay, third canto. But then we started having trouble really understanding what was going on. Because it's not just a matter of the logic. The same philosophy occurs again and again. How many people here have heard before that Krishna expands himself? Okay, yeah, okay. It's like, well, here it is, 5th canto. But there's something more detailed about it now, a finer impression. Again and again and again, it's mentioning Maharaj Nabi as the son of Agnidra. It's not calling him by his name. It's calling him again and again as the son of Agnidra. Is Maharaj Nabi a pure devotee? Before it says he wasn't. You know, it says that everybody has material desires, everybody's being carried away by material desires. And it says even Maharaj Nabi was not free from these things. Not free from these things. It's very subtle, like that, you know. But he wanted the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a son, right? Yeah, the gopis want a conjugal relationship with Krishna. But Kubja also wants a conjugal relationship with Krishna. Subtleties. Yeah, yeah. Kubja wants to enjoy a conjugal relationship with Krishna. And the gopis want to serve Krishna in a conjugal relationship. What do you want to do? Do you want to enjoy seeing the deities? Oh, they're so beautiful. How nice it is to look at the deities. Do you want to enjoy prasadam? Or do you want to serve prasadam? Yeah, very subtle. Going on and on like that. And the desire to enjoy is very subtle. You know, usually Prabhupada says people think of God as the supreme order supplier. Hey, God, give me this, give me that. You know, I bow my head. Give me this, give me that. Help me, save me from this anxiety. You know, and so I don't think Maharaj Nabi is so gross that he wants God as his son, so he can, you know, it's more convenient to ask for things. Hey, I want this, I want that. You know, but maybe for the prestige, you know, for the, you know, the honor, the subtle gratification, like that. Yeah, yeah. And so, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, we can have a very elevated consciousness of who is Krishna. Other people, Maitreya Muni. Where does Maitreya Muni appear in the Bhagavatam? First canto? Okay, third canto. Of course, like that. Yeah. So Maitreya, how does Maitreya appear? He's our Bhakti Bhai Bhava student, all this stuff. Okay, yeah. Yeah, so Krishna's finished his pastime, his activity, and he's about to leave the planet, so he's wandering in a little forest, and then Uddhava's following him because Uddhava can't stand the separation. So finally Krishna sits down, ready to leave, and he gives final instructions to Uddhava, and that time Maitreya Muni comes. So is Maitreya a pure devotee?
No.
No? What kind of devotee is he? Huh? Yeah, Jnana Mishra Bhakta. Jnana Mishra Bhakta. He's a devotee, but his devotion is mixed up with speculative abilities. He's proud of his intellectual ability to organize things, to think about things. You know, if we met Maitreya Muni, we'd probably all think he was the nicest person we ever met. Very sincere person, very generous, very clean, very kind. But a little attached to his ability to figure it all out. Actually, the philosophy is not quite like this, it's like that, and so on, you know? So, he knew Krishna, yeah, like that, but he didn't quite have a personal relationship. So when he saw Uddhava and Krishna talking, then for the first time, he realized the importance of having a personal relationship with Krishna, right? I remember one time when life member came to our temple in San Francisco. Nice altar, big altar. And he said he saw the pujari offering the lamp and everything else. And he said, I've realized that the deities are actually people. He said, I never seen the pujari offer the lamp like that. And he said, that I realized, my goodness, Krishna is actually a person. Like that, you know? So sometimes people have this experience. They're very pure, they're very purified, they understand, they're in the right position. Brahmande Brahmate Kon, Bhagyavan Jeev. At that point, they can get the bija, you know, and realize. But before that, they don't have that consciousness that Krishna is a person. It's impersonal, like that. Yeah. So same way, the understanding the consciousness of Maharaj Nabi, that's the whole point, is to enter into the bhava of the Bhagavatam, to enter into the story, to be there. And then it changes our heart. You know, it changes our perspective, our consciousness, our attitude. And then we can see things we never saw before, like that. Every single psychological circumstance you can encounter is in Srimad Bhagavatam. So if you take Srimad Bhagavatam to heart, doesn't matter who you meet, whatever you come in contact, you'll be able to preach to them, to understand them, like that. That's a wonderful book. And available in the gift store for only that much. Like that, full set. So this is the Bhagavatam, different levels of consciousness. The first two cantos are Krishna's lotus feet. The first canto is a preface. Who's talking to who, under what circumstances, what's the purpose of the book, what are the qualifications expected from the reader. That's all in the first canto. Who's Maharaj Pariksit, who's Sukadeva Goswami, why was Srimad Bhagavatam spoken? That's all there. So in the second canto, we're ready to hear Sukadeva Goswami and his preaching of Srimad Bhagavatam, like that. So he explains everything very nicely. But then, at the end of the second canto, Maharaj Pariksit says, you've explained everything very nicely, but basically all he explains is the position of Mahavishnu, right? And Maharaj Pariksit knows that when Vidura met Maitreya, who had heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Krishna and Uddhava, he got a higher knowledge than that. What Krishna was explaining to Uddhava was his position in Dwarka. Because some people think that Krishna is the Hindu love god, right? For those people who are a little too attached to romance, then Krishna incarnates as some kind of compensation to attract them. But the real form of God is Sriman Narayan. Sriman Narayan is the actual form of God. And Krishna is, you know, is like a, for people who are too, a little bit too lusty, then he incarnates to attract them like that. You know. So Krishna was explaining to Uddhava, no, my pastimes in Dwarka and Mathura are actually superior to my pastimes as Mahavishnu, like that. So it's more subtle knowledge. So Vidura wanted to hear that from Maitreya, to understand this, you know. So at the end of the second canto, Maharaj Pariksit says, what about, the sages say, what about the meeting between Vidura and Maitreya? It must have been very interesting. So we go ahead with that story, then how they met. And Vidura doesn't ask Maitreya about, you know, Dwarka and places like that, because he feels a little shy, you know, I mean, other people are present, so let me ask first about Mahavishnu, the creation of the world, these kind of things. And during that, it describes the creation by Mahavishnu, the creation by Brahma, and then the creation by the Manus. Because the creation is going a little bit slow. Lord Brahma is creating all these mental children from his heart. Shiva, the Kumaras, Atri. But it's too slow. He has to create bodies for everybody like that. So out of his anxiety comes Satarupa and her husband, Swayambhuva Manu. And the Bhagavatam says, he has a big mustache and she has a real nice figure. Okay? Biological creation. Like that. Yeah. Says that. But there's so much in the Shuddhasattva that they have no bodily concept like that. She's not conscious of his big mustache and she's not conscious, he's not conscious of her good figure. They just don't, they're so purified, austerities. So Brahma says, will you please, like, you know, get, come down to an earthly level. Come down to Bhumandal, and so you can develop passion, attraction, and then start producing children for me. And they say, okay, we'll do it for you. We'll do that. But it's a problem. We can't come down to Bhumandal because... Huh? Yes, because the earth has been submerged in an ocean of anxiety, an ocean of stupidity, an ocean of greed. So then Lord Varaha manifests, okay, everything's okay. And so after this, the rest of the third canto, the fourth canto, the fifth canto, the sixth canto, the seventh canto, are all about Swayambhuva Manu and his children. Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti, Uttanapada, Priyavrata. There's an acronym we have here, mnemotechnic, DAP UP. Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti, Uttanapada, Priyavrata. DAP UP. First of the Udi sisters. Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti. Devahuti married? And their son was? Yeah, four or five chapters. Okay, third canto. Fourth canto, Akuti married? Very short. Ruchi, and they had an incarnation of Vishnu and his Lakshmi for a daughter and son. Okay. Then Prasuti married? Daksha, and then there was a story of Daksha, Sati, okay. Then after that, Uttanapada. And Uttanapada's son was? Dhruva, many chapters there. Then all the descendants of Dhruva, down to Maharaj Parchinibarihi. Yeah, Barihi Maharaj, Prachini Barihi, and his sons of Prachetas, like that. So the fourth canto is DDPP. Daksha, Dhruva, Prithu, Pracheta. Yeah, Daksha, Dhruva, Prithu, Pracheta. That's the whole fourth canto, like that. See? There's been a fourth coming to class. Yeah. And then the Prachetas were doing austerities, like good students, right? Modern world, a father sends his sons off to go to school to become doctors, lawyers, engineers, whatever. Do austerities so you can become good grihasta. So Maharaj Prachinibarihi sent his sons off to do austerities so they could become good grihastas. And so then they're under the water doing austerities when the fourth canto finishes. And the fifth canto we come to, dap up, Priyavrata, like that, his story. And then we go back to the Prachetas, and they come out of the water. They have Daksha as a son, second time. And this way the Bhagavatam is very well organized. It's very well organized. It's a very good systematic process. Okay, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all the children of Daksha. And then 8, the other 13 Manus. And it says all Swayambhuva Manu. So that number 8 is the other 13 Manus, like that. Number 9, Canto 9, our Manu, who is? Yeah, and all of his descendants, which takes us to, click on the star, click on the plus sign, whoop, Krishna and Balaram. So the 10th canto is an expansion. Then after that, whoop, close it back up. 11th canto is finishing off our Manu after Krishna and Balaram. 12th canto is the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, summary of Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, Srimad, 18,000 verses in 9 minutes. So you see, it's very well organized. It's very progressive. More and more deeper consciousness. Here we see Maharaj Nabi, who is the son of Agnidra, and maybe he's being identified that way because he's not such a great personality himself, but his father was a great personality. Like they say, introduce me. Oh, he's a Prabhupada disciple. It's like, you know, by myself, I'm not very impressive, but you say, oh, Prabhupada disciple. Oh, Prabhupada disciple. Okay. Like that. So the son of Agnidra. Oh, the son of Agnidra. You know, okay. So Maharaj Nabi, again and again, the son of Agnidra. And it appears he wasn't a pure devotee. But he was a devotee. He was a materialistic devotee, Sakam devotee, and he wanted God for a son. Right? There's no rule. Any grihastha here can ask Krishna to become your son. There's no rule. You can't ask that, you know. You can ask Bhakti Siddhanta to become your child or something. And you can pray, if you're going to have children, why not have good children, you know, special like that, you know. And of course, by that association, Maharaj Nabi is going to be a purified. So who does he get as a son? Yashabdev, yeah, who's nobody like him, like that, and so on. So very, very nice section of the Bhagavatam. And Krishna is saying, all right, you've asked for this kind of like impossible thing, because I'm one without a second. So how can you have a child like me? You know, so he says, since I cannot find anyone equal to me, I shall personally expand myself into a plenary portion. Okay, what's the Sanskrit word for plenary portion? Angsa. It's a good word to learn. Ete cha angsa. Like that. It's a call from sun. I shall personally expand myself into a plenary portion, and thus advent myself in the womb of Meru Devi, the wife of Maharaj Nabi, the son of Agnidra. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is an example of the omnipotence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although he is one without a second, he expands himself by svangsa, his personal expansion, and sometimes by vibhinangsa, or his separated expansion. Lord Vishnu herein agrees to send his personal expansion as the son of Meru Devi, the wife of Maharaj Nabi, who is the son of Agnidra. The Ritvik, the Ritvija, is also a lot of mention of Ritviks in this, right? Ritviks are mentioned many times, priest, this and that, okay. The Ritvija, the priests, knew that God is one, and that yet they prayed for the Supreme Lord to become the son of Maharaj Nabi, to let the world know that the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is one without a second. When he incarnates, he expands himself in different potencies. Like that. Dot. Krishna Bhagavan ki. Yeah. Now, some thoughts came while we were chanting Jaya Radha Madhava. A couple thoughts came about the verse. Like that. And I guess I'll ask for comments and questions. This topic about whether God is one or God is two or this or that is a very big topic. In our tradition, we have Advaita, Dvaita, Shuddhadvaita, Vishishtadvaita, Dvaitadvaita. And our philosophy is Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva, you know. But in Christianity, it's also a big topic. You know, the Christian philosophers, now they've not so many people there, but before they were very serious philosophers like that. One of them was explaining Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. He's for the Christian guys here, San Bernardino de Clairvaux, St. Bernard of Clear Valley. And he's making a commentary on the Song of Solomon, the Cantar de Cantares. In the Song of Solomon, he starts off, he says, "Kiss me with the kiss of your lips." Right? So St. Bernard said, this is possible. He said, but before this, we should try and learn to kiss God his feet. Right? You know, I'm a complete rascal. I'm a terrible person. I've done everything horrible, but you've never given up on me. And you're kissing his feet, saying, thank you, thank you. Okay, Sambandha. Yeah. Then he goes next. Next kiss is the kiss of the hand. This has to be there by 4 o'clock, and you do it. You say, yes, sir. You know. So this is Abhideya, Sambandha Abhideya. You've got the process, you're following it, you're taking orders, you're becoming purified, but you have some intimacy, some connection, but not the kiss of the lips yet. You know. So he gives a very nice description from a different perspective of these different processes, different levels like that. You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says we can learn from different traditions how to see Krishna from different perspectives and gain benefit from them, like that. You know? So when he starts to talk about God having feet and God having hands and God having lips, it appears that he has to deal with the same topic because he spends an entire lecture talking about this. And this is maybe 400 years ago. And he says, you may think that I'm being blasphemous to say God has hands, God has things like this. God is one. God is all spirit, like that, right? God is pure. So how can God have these things like that? So he goes into a very long explanation, and basically it's kind of like the Virat Rup explanation. Prabhupada says that the Virat Rup is the material incarnation of Krishna, right? Krishna doesn't have a material incarnation, but it's there so people can have a relationship with him. I am the taste in water. I am the light of the sun. Among mountains, I am Meru. And people can begin to become purified by this attitude. You see, people, they appreciate this. They're becoming purified. Pantheism, the first step in God realization. Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 1. Pantheism. If you do this, mysticism. You just the Lord in the heart. Next chapter, like that. So it's a regular progression. So, pantheism, God is one. Yeah, okay. Then the next level is, Shiva, okay. Lord, Shiva? Yeah. Prabhupada says that Lord Shiva is the functional material incarnation of Krishna. The functional material incarnation. Now Krishna wants to do something. So if you want to play with a kitty cat or something, or you take a piece of string like that and playing with him and he plays with it, but you don't want to touch him personally. It's contaminating, poisonous. So Krishna doesn't come in contact with the material nature and all these nasty things. He does it through Shiva. So Shiva is the functional material incarnation of Krishna. So St. Bernard, as I'm remembering, he basically deals with it that way. Explaining, yes, God has to have a hand. God does have to have lips so we can relate to him, so we can become purified like that. So it's a basic point that Krishna does have expansions. And we have to understand them because they're different, right? There's Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas. It's all there, right? God is one, right? Right? Okay. The book is one, but boom, boom, yeah, it's one. Ice, steam, water, Okay, if I shoot some steam at you, is that okay? Yeah, but if I throw a piece of ice at you, it may kill you. It's all one, but it's the same substance with different categories. How's it go? Gnyavam, tatvam, tatvam gyan. I can't remember the first word, you know, anyway. Brahmete paramatmati bhagavaneti shabdate. It's the same substance, but it has three categories. Brahman, paramatma, bhagavan, like that. So the same way God is one. The supreme personality of Godhood is Krishna. Womanhood, manhood. The word Godhead, Godhead comes from the word Godhood. Manhood, womanhood, Godhood. So the supreme personality of Godhood is Krishna. And then Balaram is? Yeah, that was the first verse of Chaitanya Charitamrita. He's Prakash. Prakash, manifestation, expansion. And then? Avatar, like that. You know? And then Shakti, Parashakti. And then, Tatastha Shakti. And that's it. That's everything. Everything is in one of those five categories. But it's all one like that, so on. So then the avatars only deal with what? They deal with Vaikuntha, avatars? Yeah, they only deal with the material world. Right? They're only in relationship to the material world. They have their lokas in the spiritual world in Vaikuntha, like that, but they're designed to deal with the material world. Who are some avatars? What are categories of avatars? Give me there. Five categories of avatars. Five categories. Can't help him here. Purusha avatars, Manu avatars, Shaktivesh avatars. I'm cheating. Guna avatars, Lila avatars, Yuga avatars, like that. Yeah, and all kinds of different avatars like that. Yeah, and Lila avatars are usually coming from the spiritual world. And they have their eternal Lila, Nitya Lila. You can go to Varaha Loka and stay with Varaha, you know, forever like that. Yeah. So then the other expansions are the non-material expansions. What are some of those? Expansions of Krishna, spiritual expansions in the spiritual world. Vishnu, Vaikuntha, yeah. Balaram, Shankarshan, Vasudeva, Pradyumna, like that. So on. And they all have different relationships. Does Vishnu reciprocate Sakya Ras? No speculating. No. Yeah. There's going to be something there, but Ram reciprocates Dasya Ras with some Sakya Ras. Some big guy in the Indian government, he has different important posts, he's assigned this job, that job. Maybe he has a chauffeur. He's been his chauffeur for 25 years, you know? So after some heavy day in the office, he says, let's go through the park. So he's driving and he talks to the chauffeur about what's happening in the government and, you know, confidential things about different people and stuff. And the chauffeur's talking to him and he's you know, joking and arguing with him. So, but he remembers, all he remembers, I'm the chauffeur. My primary rasa is servant. But we have some friendship, like talking like that, like friendly like that. So Ram reciprocates that. Does Ram reciprocate Parakya Baba? No. Rama is what? Ekapatnivrata. Right? Yeah. So that's why Krishna is... What's the name for Krishna we're coming to here? Yeah, Rasaraj. Yeah. He reciprocates all these like that. So God is one. Really, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everybody else is Krishna manifesting himself in limited forms. It's Krishna, but he's not manifesting everything like that. So on. So now, Maharaj Vishnu is agreeing to become an Ansa, to incarnate as the son of Nabi, the son of Agnidra, yeah, for the purpose of satisfying his desires, which he deserves. He deserves this. You know. So what are we going to do, right? What do we want from Krishna? Again, the opportunity is there to have Krishna as your son, but what kind of consciousness do you want? When we're chanting Hare Krishna, what result do we want? Right? Do you want material sense gratification? Right? Do you want Krishna to become your enemy? Yeah. Some people will only reciprocate with Krishna in anger. So Krishna becomes their enemy. He's so kind, right? And kills them, fights with them, you know, and they become purified like that, you know? So very, very nice pastime. You know, little story here. I'm going to finish off here. So we go to until 8:45? Okay, so let me ask now. Any questions? Koi prashna hai? Okay, all right. Any questions or comments? Complaints? Donations? I'm not a pure devotee yet. Yeah. Okay. So have you been in the classes for the last 2 weeks? Last week, have you been here for the previous classes? Okay. Yeah. Because about 3 or 4 verses before it says, yeah, because the priests asked for it. Yeah. It probably says there are different ways you can go. You can do the ritual. You can do this and that, or you can go through the Ritvik. Yeah. Because the Ritviks asked for it, then and they're pure. They're doing their job. You know, Krishna sets up different material things so people will become purified. He sets up rules. He establishes Varna Ashram. By following Varna Ashram, you're more or less worshiping Krishna. But it's in a very impersonal, direct sense like that. Showing respect for the laws is showing respect for the king. The king makes certain laws. So if you follow those in a very indirect, you know, way, you're showing respect for the king. Yeah? See? And so the same way the priests were all bona fide priests. They did austerities, they did everything properly, and on behalf of Maharaj Nabi, the son of Agnidra, they then, because his father too, you know, they asked for this, and they were embarrassed. When Vishnu appeared, they said, "Oh my God, he actually came. You know, we're really sorry to ask you." No, it was like that. They said, "We're really sorry to ask you for this, you know? And we're kind of stupid. We feel really stupid to ask you to become this guy's kid. You know, he's such an idiot. He could ask for, you know, become Indra, the king of heaven, or he could ask for liberation in Vaikuntha, but instead he's asking for you to become his son, you know, like that, you know, so on, you know? So, and Vishnu says, "Yes, but," he said, "but, you know, because you asked for it, you know, I have to do it because your words, I can't let your words fail like that." So that's why. Yeah. Now, Krishna does many things with the same situation like that. I mean, I would say it's almost impossible to find that Krishna did one thing one time. Everything Krishna does, you know, is like, takes care of this, and that at the same time. So as he satisfies Maharaj Nabi's desires, then also he can incarnate as Rishabhdev, and then he can preach to, you know, Maharaj Bharata, yeah, and establish all these things at the same time like that. Yeah. But as I say, it starts to become more and more interesting, you know. It's pretty much 8 years ago, Jitatmana Prasantasya Paramatma Samahita. By the time we become, our senses are under control, adoshrada, sadhusanga, bhajanakriya, nartanivritti, nishta. Okay, sannyasi, goswami, goswamini, ladies too, children. At that point, you're in touch with the Paramatma. So how much do you need? You know, you don't need a lot of instruction. You need a little few hints here and there. You know what's going on. And confirmation, yeah. So these more advanced cantos, it's expected that, you know, the people who are reading them are already going to be Goswamis. Like I was saying, Prabhupada says, don't go beyond the first two cantos if you can't control your gross sexual desires, right? And as they stop distracting you more and more, you know, the less and less distraction, yeah, then you get more and more in touch with the super.